Last week, I had a busier than usual week, and I don't say that for any reason other than to say by Friday evening, I had made the effort to be completely ready for Sunday because I knew that on Saturday I'd be out of town for a funeral, and I knew that if I was not ready for Sunday by Friday evening, then Saturday would just be a nightmare. And so I worked hard, I got everything ready, and I was prepared for not only the preaching Sunday, but for the service on Saturday that I'd be speaking at. And being in Paducah, a little over 2 hours away, Susie and I had plenty of time to talk and plenty of time to visit. And so we were talking on the way there about different things, and life was good, life was fine. And then on the way home, we began talking about something that kind of got my blood boiling. You ever have those conversations? And it wasn't her fault, it was just what we were talking about. It kind of stirred up some feelings and it stirred up some emotions again. And boy, I got bothered, just to say the least. I got very bothered. And she asked me a question. She said something to the effect of, "Do you think that has anything to do with that verse, like if you know your brother's got aught against you, you're supposed to like do something?" And I said, "It's funny you bring that up, because that's the very passage we're dealing with tomorrow night." And I was excited to tell her. And I was excited to tell her, this isn't my fault, what we're talking about and what's got me all riled up. So therefore, it's not my responsibility to try to make things right. That's what I told her. I was just as convinced because I had studied it out. I was convinced this is not my responsibility. It is the other person's responsibility to try to make things right and to try to reconcile things. And so last Sunday night, you may remember, we were going back some in our study of Matthew chapter 5, and Christ, in dealing with the disciples, was talking about anger issues. You remember this? And how it's so easy to be critical of the murderer because they have murdered, and yet Christ said, "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment," and everything we've looked at. And as we were going through it last week, you know, "Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar," in verse number 23, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift. And so I don't know if you remember this or not, but last week I'm preaching, we got to do everything we can to make the relationship right. It doesn't matter if it's our fault or their fault or our fault. And man, I was preaching and I was enjoying myself, and I felt a liberty to convey all those truths last week that I felt like I was supposed to convey. And I don't know if this has ever happened to you, if you've ever done public speaking, but it's amazing how many thoughts can be running through your head while you're actually talking about something else at the same time. So here I was preaching to you all, make it right, doesn't matter whose fault it is, you do whatever it takes to make it right. And it was like the Holy Spirit was saying, "Yeah, what about that situation yesterday? You know that one you were telling Susie, it's not your fault and it's not your responsibility to go after this relationship and try to make it right?" And I only tell you that to say this. Last week I had to decide, am I going to practice what I've preached or just preach it? Because after church, Susie and I went out to eat, and we were just talking over our very expensive hamburger at McDonald's, and just discussing the message and the situation from the day before. And she said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I have to do what I can to try to make it right." And so last week, I had to make a phone call to a person that I frankly didn't want to talk to. And I had to begin a conversation that I didn't want to begin, and I had to talk about some things that I didn't want to talk about, but I had to do what the Bible says to do if I'm going to be right with God. And I say that tonight to say this. Last week, you may have heard a message about reconciliation and making things right with people and doing what you can to make a relationship right with people. And you may have said, "Oh, that's hard. Oh, that's tough. Oh, that's difficult." I understand. Trust me, I understand, because I was wrestling with it while I was preaching. I was wrestling with it after the service was over, and I was wrestling with it at the meal, and I was shaking whenever I made the phone call. But it had to be done. So I say that to say this: if you really want to be obedient to the Word of God, You got to do things that sometimes you don't want to do. You got to do some things that are difficult. You've got to do some things that are hard. Again, not because it's fun, but because it needs to be done to be made right with God. Now, that in mind, this evening we're going to move on. And how I wish the subject matter got easier, but it doesn't. So tonight I want to begin with a thought that I have mentioned before. You know this as well as I do. But a statement that I'd like us to think about, this evening is this. What we are willing to do to accomplish something proves how badly we truly want it. Did you get that, or were you distracted? Think about that for just a moment. What we are willing to do to accomplish something proves how badly we truly want it, whatever it may be. We're all familiar with the old cliche or the old statement. I don't know exactly who said it first. Whenever you look at the internet, sometimes you're questioning how valid the credit is. But you know the statement, right? Or the little sentence, talk is cheap. Talk is cheap, but actions are priceless. You can talk about it till the cows come home. But until you're willing to do whatever it takes to get it, you're not really serious. You're just talking about it. I was thinking about my own personal life after Wednesday night. I don't know if you'd remember this or not, but I poked a little bit of fun at myself because I was out of breath after singing and then walking two steps up to the platform. And I thought, okay, that's pathetic. That is absolutely pathetic, but I'm not about to ride my bike in this kind of weather. And so Thursday, I thought, okay, Kyle, you got to do something. Get some cardio back. I mean, that was just embarrassing last night. So I decided I'll jump rope. You've heard me talk about that. And so I was ready to jump some rope that night. I had come home from the church on Tuesday or Thursday, I guess it was, and I was going to go out to the garage and jump rope. So I put on a T-shirt, I put on some shorts, I had on my socks, and I was ready to go out to the garage and jump some rope, and Nathan was watching a basketball game. Well, I sat down for just a minute to put my shoes on. But it was a really good game, and I don't even remember who was playing, but it was a good enough game that I never quite got my shoes on. And I never quite got out to the garage, and I never quite jumped a rope, which means I never got any cardio. But here's the point. If you had said to me, do you want to get back into some cardio exercise routine? Do you want to get your stamina built back up so you're not breathing heavy after singing a song? I would have said, well, yeah, I want it. Well, how bad do you want it? Well, obviously not very bad, or I couldn't have been sidetracked by a game that I can't even remember who was playing now 4 days later. You understand this principle, don't you? Talk is cheap. Actions are priceless. What we are willing to do to accomplish something proves how bad we truly want it. And until we're willing to do it, we may want it, but we don't really want it. All right. Keep in mind, Christ said in verse number 20, okay? For I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. That is what Christ said to the disciples, right? If you are going to place your hope and your trust and your confidence in your works of righteousness to enter into the kingdom of heaven, then just know your righteousness has to exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees and what they believe to be righteousness. And the Pharisees were very good at a form of external righteousness, correct? All right, so it is with that as the backdrop that Christ then began to speak about the murderer versus the anger issues of those of us who have never murdered someone. We understand that the consequences are different, but the heart issues are the same. We've got unresolved anger issues. But as soon as he got done dealing with anger and how we need to resolve the anger, in verse number 27, he said this, ye have heard that it was said by them of old, thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, several weeks ago, as we dealt with the first couple of verses here, you'll remember I said that the Bible clearly states that adultery is wrong. Correct? we really don't need to discuss this. We really don't need to spend a long time debating this. The Bible is sufficiently clear that adultery is wrong. And so for the teaching to say thou shalt not lust or commit adultery, it is wrong. But Christ went on to say in verse number 28, but I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And so I was showing us then that for men, the struggle is sometimes to look upon or to gaze upon a woman in a way that we know is not right, that we know is not appropriate. And it's a battle that every one of us struggle with and every one of us face. I know I'm doing a lot of review right now, but I think we need to kind of set the stage. I said this as well, it's not something that we outgrow. I'm not less prone to lust because I'm 40 than when I was 20. I have found that I still have the same struggle today that I had whenever I was 20, that I was 19, 18, 17. I find that that has not just taken care of itself with time. And so, again, as I said then, I would say tonight, if a man would tell you he doesn't struggle with the idea of taking a second look or looking upon something he ought not be looking at, something's not right there. He's either being very dishonest or he doesn't like women in general, and that's not a good thing either. For whatever reason, God has allowed us to be designed to be attracted by sight. And ladies, I want to say this not to try to cause any problems, but I want to say this because I think some ladies either lie to themselves or they're just ignorant about this. But ladies, don't think that your husband is above it. Men, encourage your wife to understand this. Amen. Ladies, don't think for a moment that your husband is above this. Oh, I just trust my husband. Good for you, but don't trust him. Oh, my husband would never. Well, he might not ever let you know about it. But ladies, don't act for a moment like your husband doesn't struggle with this, because all of us are sinful men. And the world puts plenty of opportunities out there for us to be stimulated by the flesh. And if we're not careful, we'll fall prey to the sin. Okay? Ladies, don't act like your husband is above this. Susie cannot afford to act like, well, my husband would never. He's the preacher. That would be foolish. What difference does it make that I'm a preacher? Now, that is a struggle men have. I said then as well that while Christ was talking to the men, and it makes sense that Christ would address the lust of men, I also said ladies can struggle with this in a completely different manner. Ladies are not stimulated by the same things that men are stimulated by. They don't have the same struggles per se that men have. But ladies can certainly be guilty of lusting or desiring things differently in their husband that they see in the lives of other husbands. They can get caught in the world of fairy tale and make believe and Hollywood drama. And if their husband would just be like that guy on As the World Turns, then what kind of a husband would my fair man be? Well, you're dealing with Hollywood, you're dealing with fiction, you're dealing with drama. Let's listen. Every one of us need to remember that lust is sinful, lust is wicked, and lust is something that ought not be true of any of our lives, but it is something that all of us are going to struggle with from time to time. And so Christ gave some instruction in verse number 29. In verse number 29, Christ said this, and if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. If thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. In verse number 30, he said this, and if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. So here Christ is speaking of adultery in verse number 27. He then likens that of lust to adultery in verse number 28. So in verse number 29 and in verse number 30, he says, if the right eye offend thee, pluck it out, and if the right hand offend thee, cut it off. And I don't know about you, but I'm sitting here saying to myself, wow. Wow. Now, why did he address the right eye and why did he address the right hand? Well, it is said, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it is said, but in their day and in their culture, that it was considered to be the right side, the right hand, the right eye that would have been the dominant feature of most people. And so what Christ was saying, seemingly, was this. Listen, the eye that would be the strongest, the eye that would be the most caught by something you ought not be looking at, the right hand that would be the most, which would be the most dominant, that would cause you to engage in more actions that would be sinful and wrong by way of lust and leading into adultery. He says, if the right eye offend thee, pluck it out. And if the right hand offends thee, cut it off. What does it mean whenever he says, offends thee? Well, it means to cause a person to stumble or to cause a person to fall. So if your right eye, that dominant eye, that side of you that seems to have the most control of you, if that were to do something that would cause you to stumble, that would cause you to fall, you pluck it out. That right hand that would lead you to action that you know is wrong, that you know is sinful, if that right hand were to do something, were to be tempted to do something that would lead you into this sin, then here is what you do. You cut it off. Does this make sense? Okay. This may not be the most wonderful of subjects to deal with, but it has to be dealt with, right? It needs to be dealt with anyway. All right. If it offends you, if it causes you to stumble, if it causes you to fall, cut it off. Now, is Christ suggesting that if we all plucked out our right eye, none of us would ever lust again? No. I'm just guessing if I wanted to, I could figure out a way to lust with my left eye. Yeah. Well, okay, good, I'm cured. This is great. I'll never lust again. Well, that's absurd, right? I mean, if all of a sudden my right hand remiss, well, this is fantastic, Susie. I had no idea the struggle would be gone. That's absurd. So if Christ says, pluck out the right eye or cut off the right hand, he is not suggesting mutilation of the body in an effort to cure yourself or to get victory in this area of lust. But what is he then saying? He is saying, do whatever it takes. Do whatever it takes to address those things that would get your attention, that would get your focus, that would cause you to lust when you know you ought not be lusting. Now think about this. Man, how many of us would stand tonight and say, if everything goes right, if I do everything according to my plans, I've got in my 10-year plan to commit adultery. None of us have such a plan in place, correct? I wish some of you men acted more convinced. Some of you are like, well, okay, I don't want to commit adultery. But just as badly as I don't want to commit adultery, I don't want to commit lust in my heart. Just make sense? I don't want to do it because of several reasons. I don't want to lust in my heart because I know it's a sin against God. But I don't want to commit lust in my heart because not only is it a sin against God, it is a sin against Susie. And not only is it an offense to God, it is an offense to my wife. And men and women here tonight, you've got to understand that it's not just adultery that is an offense against our spouse. It is that of lusting that is an offense against our spouse and against our God. So what we've got to ask ourselves tonight is this: if we don't want to commit adultery, and if we don't even want to lust, then how bad do we not want to do it? Do we just want to talk about it? Or do we want to do whatever it takes to make sure that we separate ourselves as much as we can from the struggle of lust? Consider this, please. If your right eye offend thee, pluck it out. If the right hand offend thee, cut it off. Do whatever it takes to eliminate, listen, do whatever it takes to eliminate the temptation. What are struggles in our lives these days? And I know I'm going to approach this from a man's perspective because I are one. But what are the struggles that we deal with today that the world puts in front of us on a regular basis? Well, let's not pretend the internet is not a struggle. Now, I know that many of us would say, well, it's not a struggle for me. Well, God bless you, but the internet is a struggle for many people. Because Satan has made it such that the internet can filter so much junk into our lives, even by way of pop-ups and commercials and things that have absolutely nothing to do with what we're interested in by way of the internet. I'm pretty sure that that is not really what sells car insurance. But that is many times what they'll use to try to sell insurance. I'm very sure that that is not the cook working at Carl's Jr. But the internet ad just came up and said, eat at Carl's Jr. and you'll have this whole experience. Now listen, that is one form of the problem that we see on the internet, but it's everywhere by way of pop-ups and by way of commercials. And I know that many of us are on Facebook, many of us are not on Facebook, and it's like this sharp divide, either you love it or you hate it or whatever it may be. I don't care either way, but I'm just telling you, I know this from being around the internet enough, that Facebook is full of garbage by way of trying to get people's attention, by trying to catch an eye, by trying to catch a right-handed click, and to pursue things that would fulfill the lust of the flesh. The internet in and of itself, as we all know, is not a bad thing. But we also know this, that there are many so-called news articles that really are not worthy of news. They're just trying to sell stuff to us. And it causes a problem. Because they attach photos and they give you these suggestive headlines. And I'm just being honest with you. And if you can't handle this tonight, I apologize. But I'm just telling you, they know what they're doing by way of marketing. And for us to sit here and say, oh no, I never noticed. Friends, if we ever get on the internet, and if we're even remotely honest, we know that it's there. Now, I'm not saying because it's there you have to completely avoid it and you have to cut off the internet and you have to say, well, I'm just getting myself off the grid because the internet is wicked. No, but what I'm saying is this. Would we be willing to eliminate the internet if we found we could not handle the impulses and the desires and the lust that we have? I mean, think about it. If you find yourself constantly clicking on things that you know you ought not be clicking on, if you find yourself reading articles that if the truth were told, you couldn't care less about what the articles are about. Listen, if you find yourself looking at insurance and restaurants because you really like the spokesperson, that's when you got to stop and ask yourself, how important is this internet to me? How important is a Facebook account that pops up all these stupid things from time to time if you don't have the filter set? I'm not saying that you have to do this. I'm not saying that you ought to do this. I'm not saying you need to do this. But I would say this. I know that there are men out there who are so mindful of what's taking place in the world of the internet that they every week have a report sent. And how this happens, I don't know. But every week they have a report sent to one of their best friends in the ministry, letting them see every link they've clicked on in the past week. They want some accountability. I've heard one man say, and I don't know if this is still going on, but I believe he said it was his mother who got a copy. A grown man in the ministry, married with children, and he allowed his mother to get a copy of everything he clicked on in the last week. Not because he was still controlled by his mom, but he knew this. There are certain things that if I clicked on that, I'd be ashamed for my mother to know. And so because of that, I don't want to offend mother, and I don't want to make mother upset, and I don't want to do that, so I want the accountability even to my mother to this day. All I'm trying to say is this, is how bad do we want to be right with God? When it comes to our internet service, I know that we live in a society and a culture that is so dependent upon it in so many ways, but do we want it bad enough? Let's listen, that we'd be willing to cut out the internet. Now, you may sit here tonight and say something like this. I never even get on the computer. I mean, at the house, I mean, that's what my wife gets on, or that's what my children mess with. I don't even do it. Okay, I understand, but how many of us have a smartphone? We can get the same garbage, we can get the same smut, we can get the same soft pornography on our phones that we can get on any computer. We can go to any website we want to go to and look at anything we want to look. All we've got to do is Google certain things and images will pop up that we ought not be seeing. How bad do we want moral purity in our lives? I've got kind of a running joke right now with a preacher friend of mine. He lost some weight and he's challenged me to lose some weight. And so I've gone online to try to find some funny pictures to show him my progress. Unintentionally, I just Googled something like skinny men with no shirts on. I was going to find a real skinny guy and send it to him and say the diet's going great. Okay, that's all I meant to do. Do you know how many images popped up of men that I'm sitting there going, really? This is on the internet? And I told Susie I'd hate to Google certain things about ladies knowing that this much stuff came up about men. Just typing in skinny men with no shirt, just trying to be funny. Yeah. Right. How bad do we want moral purity? If the internet is your struggle, if the internet is something that you'd have to be honest and say, man, I seem to have no control over this, and I find myself drawn to this, and I find myself attracted to this, and I find myself, you know, maybe when the wife's not there, or maybe when the kids are in bed and it's just me and my smartphone, I find myself going to places I ought not go. Listen, it is then you have to decide, are you willing to cut that off and out of your life? Do we want it bad enough to stop the subscriptions to certain magazines? Hello? Let's not sit here and act naive, like, I don't know. I don't mean to pick on them, and if you've got the subscription, that's up to you. But there came a point in my spiritual life where I said, I can't take Sports Illustrated anymore. I can't do it. Why? Because in the middle of reading an article about OU football, you flip the page, and where is it? It's advertising the swimsuit edition. And it's not leaving much to the imagination. Let's listen. There came a time where I had to say, that is not healthy for my moral life. So it doesn't matter how much I like sports. It doesn't matter how cheap the subscription was. It does not matter whatever the content may be. Because of what they're pushing and because of the products they're really trying to sell in there, I cannot subscribe to that with a clear conscience. There are certain magazines that I've learned, don't even pick them up. Why? Because the garbage that they put in that stuff, even though I don't subscribe to it, I see it at a doctor's office or I see it at the barber shop or whatever it may be, I just know, don't even pick that magazine up anymore. Why? Because of everything it has in it. And I'm just saying this as much as I could say anything. Ladies, do you want your husbands to lust? Ladies, I mean, stand up real quick if you say, I want my husband to lust after another woman. Okay, then help your husband, ladies. Get rid of the girly magazines that have women in there that would cause your husband to lust, because whether you realize it or not, you can't be photoshopped in real life. You can't. And photographers and editors will spend hours, from what I hear, sucking in all the things that need to be sucked in and blowing up all the things that need to be blown up. And you want to leave that around the house? I trust my husband. Just put a capital S on your forehead, ladies. And that doesn't stand for spectacular. Men, how bad do we want purity? Bad enough that we'll tell our wives, get that garbage out of our house? I'm just telling you, the JCPenney catalog, whenever it used to come to our house, that needed to go in the trash as soon as possible. Somebody says, what kind of pervert? I'm not a pervert. I happen to be a normal, red-blooded American male. How bad do we want moral purity? Do we want the purity bad enough that this causes us to stumble, if this causes us to struggle in our thoughts, if we find ourselves just doing a quick head glance back over, and you say, how do you know what you're talking about? Because I'm guilty. How bad do we want it? Tell your wife, get rid of that. I don't want to see that around the house. Do you want to be a stumbling block to me? If you don't want your husbands to struggle, ladies, get rid of it. And men, if Sports Illustrated or any other thing, I mean, that was my struggle. I've never subscribed to Field and Stream. I don't know. I've never subscribed to Car and Driver. But I have seen some Car and Driver type magazines at Walmart, and I'm thinking, I bet she's really not a mechanic. How bad do we want it? Good grief, you're so weird. Christ said, pluck out the eye and cut off the hand. You think that sounds a bit odd? What about our televisions? And the movies we watch? It blows my mind how many people will funnel that garbage into their house and act like it's no big deal. Somebody please act like, yeah, it's true. It doesn't even have to be after 10 o'clock anymore to see the smut on TV. I mean, good night, just the advertisements alone. I know that you know this, and I'm not saying, well, if you got cable, you're not right with God, because I do have cable. But what I am saying is this: I know it's a struggle. And if there comes a point where I can't handle the TV, if there comes a point where I can't handle the content flowing in, then I've really got to ask myself, how bad do I want the moral purity between God and my wife? Am I just going to talk about it and preach to you about moral purity? Or do I want it bad enough that I'll not just suit up, but I'll actually go out and perform what I say I want? Just because it's a movie doesn't mean it's okay. Just because you're watching it with your spouse doesn't mean it's okay. Because I can promise you what you're thinking, ladies, and what he's thinking are two totally different things. You know, TVs at one time, and I think they still have them, we just don't use them anymore, they used to have like parental guides. And you could block certain things that if it had this kind of content in it, the show wouldn't even allow you to, it wouldn't even allow you to see the show. Oh, I'm a grown man. Ain't nobody going to do that to my TV. Okay. Then just sit there and keep watching the smut and telling your wife, no, it don't affect me. Liar. And then lie to God like you're not affected by it. How bad do we want moral purity? I see what time it is. Just know we're not getting out at 7. How bad do we want it? Do we want it bad enough we'll get rid of certain friends who take our minds places that we don't need to go? I'm not talking to you. You are a pervert. You talk about things that men, married men especially, don't need to be talking about. Have we taken a stand to the guy who tries to put those thoughts in our heads, men? I'm not going to run with you. I'm not going to spend time with you. Why? Because you don't help me in my moral purity with my wife and with my Lord, and I am going to cut it off rather than to let it offend me and cause me to stumble. I know that most of you all are not mall men like I used to be, but I do know this, and I'm not trying to be funny, but there are lingerie stores in malls, in stores, and they use models to model their stuff. So I don't care if you're only over there a couple times a year and Christmas and certain occasions where you're with your wife walking through the mall. I'm just here to tell you that when you're walking by certain stores, it is not your right and your prerogative to just take a good long gander while going by the windows. I can tell you exactly what is across the store from Victoria's Secret at the mall. It's the Gap and Gap Kids and a couple of other stores. Why? Because whenever I go to the mall, I have to remember if I look over there, I'm going to entertain thoughts I ought not be entertaining. So I need to look on this side of the mall as we walk by. Why? Because I don't think that's what angels truly look like. Just know, I'm not trying to preach something weird and archaic and like, what are you, some kind of a Puritan? No, it's not that. I'm not trying to squelch the romance and the beauty and the physicality of a right relationship with your wife. What I'm trying to do is help us protect that by not letting the outside influences interfere with our thoughts and our minds while we're trying to enjoy the marriage that God has given us. We don't need certain posters in our workspace. I don't need certain calendars to help me remember what day of the week it is. If I'm that unintelligent, I'll just ask Susie, what day is it? but I don't need this lady reminding me what day it is. You understand this? Moral purity. Great, you haven't committed adultery. Great, you haven't had an affair. But I will say this, if you commit lust, if you look upon a woman to lust after her, you have committed already adultery with her in your heart, men. And ladies, the same can be said to you from a totally different perspective. If you sit around and watch the soap operas, if you sit around and watch the modern day love stories, if you get wrapped up in romance novels, which I can't begin to fathom that, but if you begin to find yourself intrigued in these things and having weird thoughts that you know you ought not have, how bad do you want purity? I remember several years ago, and Susie doesn't mind me saying this, but I remember several years ago her saying that she got used to watching a show while the kids were down for a nap. And within the show, there was content that should not have been watched and things that should not have been viewed. And it was justified because she's married and it's no big deal. And she began to realize this is affecting my thought life. How bad do we want moral purity? Do we want it bad enough that we'll get rid of the internet, that we'll get rid of the subscription, that we'll get rid of the cable, that we'll get rid of the friends, that we'll get rid of the pinups, that we'll get rid of the postcards or the calendars, that we'll look the other way when we're in a store and we're not going to look at the magazine rack there at the end? How bad do we want it? Because if you notice what is said next in both verses, Christ said, "And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not thy whole body should be cast into hell." What in the world is he saying? Is he saying that if you've ever committed adultery and if you've ever lusted, well, sorry, you're going to hell? Well, that's not what he's saying. You understand that? That's not what Christ is saying. So what is Christ saying? Well, remember, we're dealing with the self-righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees looking to their external actions for righteousness rather than a righteousness of the heart. So how do you reconcile the statements that Christ has made to the disciples? Well, if you go to Galatians chapter 5, don't do it right now, but if you go to Galatians chapter 5 this evening or sometime this week, here's what you'll see. Paul talks about the works of the flesh in contrast to the works of the Spirit. The very first work of the flesh that Paul addresses is that of adultery. The very first work of the flesh that Paul addresses. Then he goes on to things like fornication, witchcraft, murder, drunkenness, and the list goes on and on and on. And here's what Christ, or what Paul says of the works of the flesh. He says, "Those that do these things shall not inherit the kingdom of heaven." Now, was Paul saying that if you've ever murdered someone, you can't go to heaven? Well, of course not. Why? Because Paul was a murderer who got saved on the Damascus Road. But what Paul is identifying and what Paul is addressing is this, is if this characterizes your life, if this is who you are, if you can be an adulterer and feel no remorse, no guilt, no sorrow, no conviction for what it is you're doing, just know you're not dealing with the saved individual. This is someone who is not going to inherit the kingdom of heaven. Why? Because a saved person doesn't live that way. Find somebody who can murder someone and they have no guilt, no remorse, no sorrow, no conviction. Just know you're not dealing with someone who has the Spirit of the living God dwelling within them. So consider the person who will lust and lust and lust and lust. It's adultery. It is adultery. It is adultery of the mind. Friends, if that can happen, and it can happen, and it can happen, and it can happen, and there's no real effort to actually ever sever it and to cut it off and to remove it, and somebody can walk around pious as though they've never done anything wrong because they have never committed adultery physically. And you know what you're dealing with? Someone who has not truly ever been made right with Jesus Christ. And they are not one who will inherit the kingdom of heaven, which means when they die, their whole body will perish and be cast into hell. How important is it that I address this? It is eternally important. There are eternal consequences to this. Listen, I know I've said this many times lately, but I'll stand before God, and I don't want to stand before God with all different types of adultery of the mind having taken place. So what do I want to do? I want to be willing to cut out and to cut off anything that causes me such a struggle. And I don't want to assume anything that ought not be assumed. Give it just a couple more minutes, okay? I don't want to assume anything that ought not be assumed, but I don't want to pretend that we're all too righteous to struggle with this. And so it may be that tonight you need to go home and block some websites on your computer. You need to give some accountability to your spouse and say, as painful as this is, I'm giving you permission to ask me anytime you want if I have looked at anything like this. I would never. Okay, then yes. You must not want it real bad. Some of you tonight may need to go home and go through that little area where you keep all the magazines. Just say, I'm getting rid of it. Why? Because there's too much garbage in there that tempts me, especially if we've got boys at the house. Why would I want to invite that into my home to let Nathan look at it? He's a good kid. He's a good kid. That's the thing I'm worried about. Some of us may need to go home tonight, just throw some stuff away and just say that is trash, that is garbage, and it doesn't need to be in our house anymore. And honey, I'm not going to help you in this endeavor anymore. I'm going to make sure that it's gone, period. Some of you need to decide right now with your spouse, as of today, this show stops. I don't care if we watch it together. I don't care if we enjoy it. It stops today. Why? Because it's feeding my mind things that I ought not be feeding it. We're not going to go to these types of movies anymore. We're going to check the reviews, and if it has things that are sexual in it, things that would cause us problems, I'm not going to do it. Why? Because it's not helpful to the marriage. I want to stand before God with a pure mind, not an impure mind. Some of you may need to go to work tomorrow and just say, guys, shut up. I'm done laughing about it. I'm done thinking about it. I'm done having the conversation with you. Don't talk about that stuff with me around. Well, what happened to you? I want a morally pure mind. How bad do we want it? Because if all you got is the tennis shoes sitting beside you, but you're not out doing it, you don't want it real bad. If all you're doing is sitting on the couch of moral purity, but you're not actually applying yourself to moral purity, then we don't want it real bad. How bad do we want moral purity with God and with the spouse that God has given us? Do we want it bad enough that we will cut off and cut out anything in our lives that would prevent us from having it? Let's all stand this evening and bow our heads for prayer. Father, I pray that you'd help us tonight to take serious this issue of moral purity. Lord, I know that every one of us, men and women alike, can struggle in our own